It's a bonus episode. We're talking Ralphie's Red Riders. Hit it. It was 2020. Totally Rad Christmas was released, Twinkly had an RGB cluster light, and Ralphie's Red Riders released their You'll Shoot Your Eye Out album. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now joining me is a very special guest. You'll know him as the guitarist, vocalist, and composer of Ralphie's Red Riders, Mike Patton. Mike, how's it going?
Hey, man. Great. Glad to be back on here. Second time. Repeat. It's awesome.
Yeah. You're officially a Totally Rad Christmas All-Star.
That's right. I got stickers and everything, man.
That's true. Yeah, you do.
They're consolation stickers. I didn't win. You know.
Well, I didn't either. It was. We were up against some stiff competition.
Yeah. That was tough.
So you have a great album, I got to say.
Thank you. Thanks so much. We worked pretty hard on it. You know, it was something that was fun to plan, and we didn't know if we could execute it when we planned it out. But I think it came out as good as it could. We're really happy about it. We're proud of it. So thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime. So I got to ask, like, what was the genesis of the concept of it? Like, did you kind of have an idea you wanted to do it? I mean, I know you write you compose a song every year, a Christmas song, right? Was it started from that?
I've been writing songs for over 20 years now.
Right.
And so I kind of, you know, we're in the pop punk scene in New Orleans, and then we moved to Nashville, and, you know, we've done just a little bit of touring, and we've had some records on some indie labels and stuff like that. And just, I got kind of out of it for a few years because I felt like I had done everything I could do with pop punk, and I was a dad, and I was podcasting about horror movies and stuff, and, you know, just kind of, you know, out of that life for a little while. But yeah, one thing that we've done since 1999 is record these goofy Christmas songs every year. And so, you know, Rusty, my co-host on Snow in South Town, Rusty and I just kind of have kept this going with some friends of ours, my brothers and uncle and cousin and various people, just always recording these songs. And so that was something that I kept doing even in those years I took off. Started my new project called Vista Blue, which was sort of when I was taking that time off, I found that not only could I still do Christmas songs, I was doing some ghostwriting for like this education company, doing these like educational songs that they wanted, like this pop punk style. It was kind of weird. And then podcast friends would ask me to do theme songs for them, and I found that was easy. And then in 2013, I had a book published. It was a horror book. It was published in Australia. And we thought it would be cool to do like an EP of songs that was like recorded by these guys in this book, and they were like horror songs, and we did it. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I think probably we enjoyed the EP more than I enjoyed my book, you know. And it just kept occurring to me that I could do like these theme songs, and I was having a lot of fun with it, and I didn't see it as like the old boy girl pop punk. It was just somebody would give me a theme idea and I could do it. And so 2014, I went to the studio. My friends came to town to record a record. They were called the Euchers, and they were doing all baseball songs. And they're really great. It's like nice. Ramones baseball songs. Yeah. And so I went to the studio, and I helped them on some harmonies and just kind of arrangement stuff, and just had so much fun. And I went home and just over the next few months wrote like 12 baseball songs. I was like, hey guys, I got all these baseball songs. You can have them. I'm not doing anything. And they didn't need them because they write a ton of songs. So in 2015, we started this band, Vista Blue. And all of 2015, we did like three baseball releases full of baseball songs. And then we did a Christmas EP. So 2016 came, we were like, well, we need to do like new themes. We can't just do baseball. So we did horror, we did summer, we did all these themes. And Christmas was just something that we did every year. Mm-hmm. So finally last year, I discovered this great band. They were called the Home Alones. And
love it.
Yeah. And you got to find this EP. It's tremendous. The main song on EP on YouTube is Fuller, Easy on the Pepsi. It's just an amazing song. And so I looked them up and I found the EP. It's like six songs, all from Home Alone. And I had a song from Home Alone. It was called I Made My Family Disappear. Nice. And so I reached out to them and I sent them my Home Alone song. I was like, I love you guys. Here's a song I wrote to you. And they were just, they loved my song and they were really nice. And we talked a lot. And so I was like, man, I'm going to start a band called Ralphie's Red Riders. And we're going to be like rivals, but then we'll also like tour together and like play shows together. And, you know, we were just cracking up. We were just kind of laughing. And so I wrote a song. It was called Can't Put My Arms Down. And I just did like an acoustic demo and I put it on our Christmas thing that we do every year with our friends. So I just thought about it for a few weeks. And then I was like, this would be fun. We should do it. Talked to Mark from Vista Blue. He loved it. His wife loved it. His father-in-law loved it. All of our friends, like all these people were like, you got to do it. So contacted a couple labels that I knew, and nobody was really into it for vinyl. And so we're like, well, you know, it'll still be fun just to do like a digital thing. And you know, I still think it would have been great for vinyl, but nobody was really willing to put up the money. So talked to Matt from Out Loud Records, who does CDs mainly, and he loved it. He was on board right away. And so he said, this is it. We'll just do a CD. And this was back in January. Vista Blue has always done a baseball song every year, right? Mm-hmm. Or like a baseball release, either like a full length or an EP. So this year we said, look, 2020, you know, this is pre-pandemic, you know, we said, we're going to just focus on Ralphie's Red Riders. Let's slow down Vista Blue. I mean, Vista Blue, we did a record at Arden Studio last year. I mean, we did we've done so much over the last 5 years. So let's just slow it down and try this band, you know? And so instead of a Vista Blue baseball song, which people would expect, we said, we're going to launch our Christmas band with a baseball song. And really, this is the genius of this movie is that I've told my friends, I could take any 10 seconds of this movie and write a song about it, right? Because there's every reference. And so I took the beginning when the old man is complaining about they traded Bullfrog, right? The White Sox. You know what I'm talking about? Right.
Yes, I do.
And I said, look, this is it. This is going to be the first song. It's a Christmas band, but we're going to release a baseball song in March, right? On opening day. So we got the song recorded. They traded Bullfrog. And of course, the baseball season gets shut down before we can release the song. Mm-hmm. So we went ahead and just released it anyway. And for the next few months, just kind of built up. A few radio stations played. They traded Bullfrog. And in June, you know, a lot of stuff went on in between with the pandemic. But in June, went to work and recorded the album. So, I mean, it was like December wrote a couple songs. January wrote down a bunch of titles. Probably sometime in the spring. You know, like April and May, just went through and just kind of put together like 16 songs and picked like the 10, 11, 12 that we liked and put them on the record. So
right on.
Yeah, it was really pretty quick the first 6 months of the year. Like, you know, we spent most of June working on it. So I got it done probably by July, sent it off to the label. So.
Oh, wow. So it took about a month to get it all recorded?
Yeah, we worked pretty quick. I mean, we work from home anyway. Mm-hmm. And so the pandemic just, you know, we're all quarantined for the summer and we do a lot of sending files around to friends and I don't know if you want to get into each song and I can tell you more about it, but yeah, I mean, so I do most of it and then like, Mark does all the bass and then we got other friends that pitch in here and there and different stuff. So, and I can get into it. I don't know how much you want to get into, but, yeah, I mean, we did it mostly throughout June, just kind of back and forth. And this is also, like I said, Vista Blue is really prolific. We've got over 30 releases since 2015. That's just digital. We got vinyl and cassette and CD too. This is the longest I've spent mixing an album. And so I really, you know, like it was June and we didn't need it till November. And so, like I said, I wanted to get it to the label by July so they could have it. So, but I mean, I spent probably, you know, probably 2 or 3 weeks just mixing. So, which is a lot for me. I'm pretty like, I think of my music more as like a snapshot. Like, this is what I did this week or this month, and then I'm done with it and I move on. So,
yeah.
So, for me, this was the most I've spent personally mixing. You know, I don't always mix my own stuff, but yeah, this is the longest I've spent actually, like, production wise.
Right on. Yeah. For me, and I'm always better with live, like, whenever I'm playing in a band or whenever I'm directing, you know, because I was a band director for a while. And so, whenever I'm in front of someone, like with live musicians, I'm always better at like mixing and you know, making sure everything's balanced. Then I am, for some reason, on recordings, I have like the hardest time just getting it balanced. And I don't know if it's just because it's not quite real time, you know, like when you're directing a band, you can literally just kind of put your hand down, point to someone or, you know, just different things or, you know, make them louder. You can do all sorts of things and they respond right away. And, you know, when you're actually mixing, especially when you're using like Pro Tools or something, you know, it's like I find it, at least for me, more difficult to actually get in there and make it work. So to hear that you actually did it yourself is always really awesome.
It's like, and then it's like each speaker is different, right? And so, but also like you'll get into it and in your head and whatever earphones or headphones you're using, it's like, oh, this works. This sounds good. And then I'd like go throw on a Ramones record or, you know, or something like that. And I go, wait, this is off. Like, it doesn't sound like a real record right now. So it was so much of that. And then I remember at one point I thought I had it and mixed it down and I went for a ride in my car, of course.
You got to hear it in the car. Yeah.
Hated it. I just hated it. So I came back, remixed it, kind of thought I had the levels where I could stand it in my ear and in the car, sent it out. And just like, this is how crazy we got it. But they were like, yeah, the cymbals are too loud. We got to bring the cymbals down. So I was like, oh, man. So I went in. I had to remix all the cymbals. Like, it was that kind of crazy. We're never that crazy about it. But this was one that we figured could reach audiences that we've never reached before, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not to say everyone's going to love it or anything, but this was one that we could see new people that haven't heard us for the last 20 years going, hey, let me check this out. And so, you know, like I said, we were home all summer anyway. We wanted to give it our best. It was free. I mean, we didn't spend any money on production. We did it all ourselves. So why not take the time to get it where we like it?
You know? Yeah, exactly. That sounds awesome. Especially the free part. Because I'm
all about that. Yeah. Yeah. So we went to Arnett and did the 7-inch there. We did a Kickstarter. And I mean, just again, we released the vinyl ourselves on that one. And so we did a Kickstarter for the studio time. We had this cover band that we were doing for a little while. And so we lined up a gig, like this gig with our cover band, and that was going to pay for the recording studio. So we set up the Kickstarter just to raise the money for we got a really good producer to work on it. So I wouldn't have to do it. And then the vinyl release. Right. And so the Kickstarter was going fine. And then our gig got canceled that we had lined up to pay for the recording session. Yeah, yeah. So we ended up kind of tight on the budget, but again, it was like such a process of like driving to Memphis, going to this like great studio and that was a whole thing in itself. And it was like surreal and kind of a dream come true for us. Cause that's where Big Star and Jim Blossoms,
that's like
and
a classic there.
I mean, some of our favorite bands have worked there. So we just had a blast, but yeah. So this was like fun to back down and just kind of, do something ourselves again. And, you know, just, like you said, free. Yeah. Not worry about the money. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to tell you right away, my favorites, I like them all, but my favorite is Hey Scut, You Suck.
So I can tell you a story about that. I can tell you stories about all of them. But so that one, that goes back. I had a song. It was called Hey Scut. I guess I'll censor it. It was called Hey Scut, We Want to Kick Your Butt, right? And so, again, it was when I always just have tapes. I mean, it used to be tapes. Now it's on my phone. Of Christmas ideas, right? So this was just an idea I had probably like 2012, okay? And when I wrote my book and we did the EP for my book, I took that song because I hadn't used it yet and I used it for the killer in my book. So the band in the book is singing this song about the guy who actually breaks out of prison and kills them all, right? So anyway, so they're writing
spoilers.
This song.
No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Well, the book's out of print. You can't even find it.
Okay.
It was very short lived, and so
just kidding. Anyway,
so I used my Scut Farkas song on that. But I had it in my head the whole time. It would be great to sing a song from Ralphie's point of view about wanting to beat up Scut Farkas, right? Mm-hmm. Well, he does too. It's like great. And so So when we decided to do this band, that was the top of my list. I knew I had to do a song about beating up Scut Farkas. Through my horror podcasting and zine stuff, I've been connected to Zach Ward, the actor who plays Scut Farkas.
So
he does great indie films now. He produces horror films and stuff. And so I've reviewed several of his films on my podcast and all of that. So I reached out to Zach. I was like, I told him what we were doing.
Yeah.
He was on board from the beginning. He's like, this is hilarious. It's going to be awesome. And I said, look, I was like, we're going to have this song called Hey Scut, I want to beat you up. You suck, you know? And I was like, I would love for you to sing on this song with us. I was like, it would just be like gang vocals. You can, you know, I don't know if you can sing or not, but it won't matter. And he was like, that's great. I'll do it. And so, we got it. Like I said, I got it probably about early June. We made sure we did that one first to give him some time. We sent it over and look, I only know about these things from like DIY punk growing up, like in our band is not punk, but that's the scene that we're in, you know? It's
right,
like,
right.
no rules, just like have fun, do fun stuff. Like, I don't know what it's like to be this iconic, to play this iconic character mm-hmm. that is in everyone's living rooms for 24 hours every year, you know, and like to go to conventions and have to. And anyway, he got the song and he was just like, I don't think I should do it. You know, he was like, I don't think people would want to hear Scott Farkas singing about beating up Scott Farkas.
That's right? True. Yeah.
And so ultimately he backed out, but he was really nice. I mean, like I said, like we were in touch for probably 2 months off and on, just like going back and forth. And ultimately he bowed out. But he was really nice about it. And I understand, but that was sort of the genesis of that was like, you know, not only do the song, but it'd be really cool to try to get Zach in. And we thought we had him for a little while and then it didn't work, but yeah, it would have been really cool. But, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
Oh, right on. Well, the my second favorite song, and we'll, I mean, I want to talk about all of them, but eventually, okay. My second favorite one is I Don't Want Your Tinker Toys.
Yeah.
I love those songs. And my main complaint about both of them is that they're too short.
Right.
I wanted it like another verse. I wanted it to go. I love them so much. It was like, oh, it's like, keep going. But
you just got to replay it. You got to play it again.
I did.
So Scott Farkas, yeah. When I hear the Scott Farkas song now, what I wish we had done, looking back, I wish we had thrown in a little like loud guitar part in the middle and then thrown in another thing. But I mean, you know, like I said, we did it really fast. And I'm always like, shorter is better. Shorter is better. Even wanting more. Like when we play live shows, you know, we're younger. When I was like 20 years old or whatever, like when we're playing shows, we try to play like hour and a half sets. And like there's five other bands and nobody wants to hear you play that long, you know? And you know, by 2010, I was like seven songs and get off stage. You know,
I hear you. You know,
even if we're traveling to another city, play seven or eight songs, get off stage and they can buy the record and we'll come back. You know, I don't know. So,
well, they're great songs. And that's the only reason why I wanted them longer. Well, I wanted to hear more of it. So like on Hey Scott, You Suck. I mean, I haven't sat down to figure it out, but it sounded like it was like a one and like a flat seven and then back to the one. And then I think there's like a five in there. Like
I don't remember, honestly. Like I did this stuff so fast. So I don't have the chords. It's probably just a 1-4-5 though. I don't know. Oh, no. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And then I think it even goes to like the flat seven or flat six, flat seven, one. Something is what it sounds like.
It's been a while.
That part there. It's really cool. It's a good progression.
Well, thank you. The one I know you mentioned Tinker Toys. That's one that I really like the chord progression of that one. That was one that's not really like something I would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually I'm 1-4-5.
I think it was like a 1-3-4 maybe.
It goes kind of all over the place. It doesn't actually. You don't get the one on that song, I think, till the last chord. If I'm right,
like that, right?
Yeah. I think that's one that's like in a different key. And then, like I said, I don't think.
Yeah, it does.
I don't think you get the one until that last chord. I'm trying to. Yeah, I got it right here. Hold on. On Hey Scott, these are not in order.
Sorry. I was just picking up my favorites there.
No, yeah, that's okay. I'm trying to find them. So Tinker Toys would technically be an F, right? But it's so it's like the A minor. Mm-hmm. So it's like a minor 3-4-5, right? But then it goes to the minor, 2. And then there's like, it's different. It's different from anything that I usually do, right?
Yeah, I got you.
It's like 3-5, 3-5, 2-4, then finally the one. Yeah,
got you. Yeah,
which
it was good. I really enjoyed it. And you're right, it was different from the rest. So I think that also kind of drew my ear. But it's just it has an energy that I really enjoyed. You know,
well, thank you.
And I don't know if it was the tempo or what, but just something about it. It was at that pace that. It just had that energy. It was like, yeah, I want to hear it again. And so I, you know, rewound it. And then it's just really catchy. Your Tinker Toys, you know, it's a catchy little bit there. So,
we thought that should be their angry song. We thought they should have a couple of angry songs, right?
So
one would be Scott Farkas. And then Tinker Toys, like, man, it's just like, that offends Ralphie, you know, like when they think he should have Tinker Toys, like that he gets mad about that. I just pictured him internalizing that and just like getting with his band in the garage and be like, guys, we're going to crank this one out. This is our angry punk song.
Yeah. Well, I really thought it was perfect because it does capture that, you know, that whole just no, I want, you know, I want the BB gun. You know, what if, and I love, there's a line in there too, where he says like, what if Black Bart, you know, comes for my family.
That is one, you know, where we had to, so the temptation was to throw in a lot of like references. Quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but then we kind of also said we no need to do it because we could just do another album next year. You know what I mean? So like, mm-hmm. we don't need to use every reference. And, you know, in fact, that we didn't say "Oh fudge" at all. There was one spot where we had, yeah, we had like an "Oh fudge," and then it was like we just kind of threw it in the background. It's like, nah, you know what? Like, just save it. That's a yeah. whole song, you know. So, yeah. So, but that was one where, you know, it was like the Tinker Toys. At first, it didn't have the Black Bart part in there. You know, it's just about like hating Tinker Toys. But then it made more sense to be like, Tinker Toys aren't going to help me if Black Bart comes. Like, I'm not a kid, you know, like,
yeah,
I got to protect my family. I need a gun. I need a BB gun. So yeah.
When you write, so do you take like a little line then and just kind of like, what's your writing process? Cause for me, I always have my best ideas when I'm in the shower for some reason, like, you know, if I were to sit down and just kind of jam with my guitar, they're terrible. And then I'm in the shower and all of a sudden I have like really great ideas. But then my problem is I usually forget them by the time I'm out. So it's like, what was it?
And so, I'm constantly singing into my phone because of that reason. So my phone, like it's this thing where like I just dumped off of my phone all my demos probably from after we finished Ralphie's Red Rider. So probably just like say the last 3 or 4 months. And there are probably over 100 files
wow.
that I dumped. Yeah. So I mean, like, I'm constantly singing into my phone. I'd say out of every 100 things that I put into my phone, I might could be able to use anywhere from, you know, 15 to 30, you yeah. know, something like that. So I mean, like, you know, the success rate is not 100%. I don't like everything I end up singing into it.
Right.
And sometimes I find out later, oh, that was the same thing I did 2 days ago. It's just been stuck in my head. And so,
yeah.
You know, so I mean, like, or like one will be a verse and one will be a chorus and I'll end up putting them together. So,
put them together, yeah.
But so I am always singing into my phone. I rarely forget songs these days because I just go right to my phone.
Nice.
Yeah. And so it's usually there. And then the process itself is like for something like this that is so specifically themed.
Right.
Like I just will have an idea. Hey, this is a topic or this is a title. Like, I don't want your Tinker Toys. Like, that's got to be the title, right? And so, like, what kind of song is that going to be? That's going to be a punk song. And, like, most of these songs are going to be 1-4-5. So we want to start with a minor chord on this one. And this has to be their angry song. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. If I take out the guitar, then usually I'll get, like, the song first. And then I'll find something to put to it. But when I don't have my guitar in my hands, it usually starts with, like, a line or a lyric idea that I have. Mm-hmm. And then I'll try to come up with a melody. Or a lot of times it's also just a melody. And then I'll use those later. And so, you know, so like yeah. sometimes I'll be sitting there. I'll go, oh, I got this chorus. I do need a verse. And then I'll flip through my phone and find a verse that didn't have anything attached to it. And then I'll use that. So, you know,
nice. It can be anything. Yeah. I think for me, when I'm writing, I usually come up with the melody first and then the lyrics later. Like, yeah. I for some reason, I have a hard time when I have the lyrics first. So it just never jives for me. It's hard to put the lyrics to music, but if the other way, it's so much easier. And so yeah. I think that's generally the way I like to work, but that's really interesting that you just kind of, you know, sing it into your phone and then you know, go from there. So,
and I've come a long way. I mean, it's, you know, it's just something that I don't know if you call it a talent. I don't know, something that I've developed. And I mean, it's mm-hmm. very sort of, you know, targeted, like it's very, you know, like it's not great. Like it's not Mozart. It's not Beethoven. Like, but it is what it is. And like, whatever it is, like, I find that I'm getting pretty good at it, you know, as I do it more and more and more. You know?
So yeah. Which is funny. Cause at least for me, sometimes that stuff's actually easier to write than it is like a good song.
Oh yeah. Well, there yeah. you go. Yeah. So. I'm the opposite. And I mean, look, I've had people criticize me over the years that I don't wail on the guitar and my melodies and my lyrics are too simple and that's fine because there are also this whole other side of people who love things like the Ramones and three chord mm-hmm. pop punk and just people who are just straightforward and tight and have a lot of melody and harmony, you know.
Yeah.
So, well, people like different stuff, so you know, I'm not gonna make, you know, the next Pet Sounds. I know that. You know, but I can do yeah. something that is kind of reminds people of the Ramones enough that you're not getting new Ramones records. So here's something else.
Yeah. You're right about that. So the album actually opens with My Decoder Ring.
Yes.
It's a great tune. I like it. It's catchy. You know, as far as the movie goes, it's about, you know, that whole little orphan Annie bit where he's,
right. And so we didn't know how we wanted to open the record. We didn't have anything in mind. I'll tell you later the song I wrote for the closer and then changed it. But we ended up with this one as the opener. As soon as we recorded it, I loved it, first of all. It surprised me how much I liked it. The key change, I think, helped. You know, it just was really simple, but also really catchy. And sometimes I don't realize how catchy they are until I get them down and they're in my head a little bit. And so I started sending this one around to friends, and everyone was really loving it. And so I knew right away that this was probably going to be one that would share first, you know, just to kind of get people into it. But also, it has the mythology that we kind of created, that this is Ralphie Schwartz and Flick playing this music. And, you know, there's the line, all the kids will want to know my trick. I'll send secret codes to Schwartz and Flick and new songs for us to sing. And so it's like, this had to be the kickoff song because we're kind of portraying this myth that this is Ralphie Schwartz and Flick. Now, I don't know what year it is or how old they are, because, you know, obviously these are not 8-year-olds singing these songs.
I'm going to say they're 17.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, have you seen the terrible sequel?
I have
Christmas
not.
Story?
Actually,
yeah. Well, so they're like 16, and it's more about like he wants a car.
And, okay.
It's pretty bad. But I mean, as a fan of the movie, everybody should watch it.
I feel like I need to watch it. Yeah.
You should watch it. And it's Daniel Stern as the dad.
So really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean,
that seems weird.
It's very weird. Because you think of him as a robber in Home Alone and the voice of Kevin in Wonder Years, but now, you know, kind of all related.
Yeah,
in a way.
That doesn't jive.
But now he's the dad. He's trying to be that Darren McGavin character. But anyway,
I don't think he succeeds. But
yeah, so they're like 16, and Schwartz and Flick are there, and they're trying to scheme. I don't know. I think he wrecks the car or something. I think he wrecks his dad's car, and he's got to come up with money to pay for it. And that's, so maybe it's those guys. But I mean, that would still be like the 50s. And these guys obviously aren't playing Ramones core pop punk in the 50s. So I don't know. Maybe they got a DeLorean and they traveled.
They might. Yeah, I don't know.
we didn't
Michael
figure
J.
it out
Fox,
that much.
Yeah, because he came back.
yeah, exactly.
But it's a good opener. It's nice and solid. It segs right into I Can't Put My Arms Down. Which is another one. And you said that was the first one that you...
That was the first one that I wrote and finished and did the demo for. And
that's, of course, referring to the infamous coat scene where...
Randy can't put his arms down.
Randy can't, exactly. Yep.
And it's one that everybody just recognizes. And we used it as the B-side for the Bullfrog, the demo. We used the demo as the B-side for the Bullfrog demo single when we put that out in March. And so people had heard the full Bullfrog and then the demo, the acoustic demo of this, back in March. And so those two have been out there. I think they're on Spotify and everything right now. So those two have been out there. And so they've gotten good reviews. If you search the internet, there's people talking about my friend Josh, who writes for Faster and Louder. In fact, wrote back in March, I think, that like his favorite lyric of 2020 so far was, "I hate Meatloaf and I can't put my arms down." Which is another one that I threw. Meatloaf could have been its own song, but I just felt like that break needed something new, and so we threw that Meatloaf.
Tell you what, though, man, that's the whole theme for 2020 for sure.
I ate Meatloaf and I can't put my arms down.
I can't put my arms down.
yes, exactly.
So that one's a standard 145.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty standard.
Yeah, I like that one.
You know, I think it starts with the 1, 6, 4, 5, right? Yeah.
Well, I know for sure the closer does.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't write the closer. We can talk about that. Oh, that's the one I didn't write. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about it for sure then.
Yeah.
It's definitely that 1 minor 6 4 5 progression.
Yep. Yeah, standard. I do that a lot.
You'll hear that. Yeah. Throughout the 60s and stuff like that. But
oh, yeah. I do that. I mean, I'm everything I do a lot is based on the 60s, you know. So but yeah, Can't Put My Arms Down is all 1, 6, 4, 5, I believe. So when it goes to Meatloaf, Double Beatloaf, that's a minor 3. Other than that, it's all 1, 6, 4, 5.
Yeah. And if you don't know what we're talking about, too bad. No, I'm just kidding. We're talking about chord progressions. Oh man. What inspired the Bumpus Hounds? Like what the?
I believe that was Mark, that our bass player, that said we had to have a Bumpus Hound song. Or maybe it was just me. I don't remember. But I mean, that was a pretty clear cut one. And then the Bumpus Hounds at the end, that's Mark's dog, Manny. He recorded Manny like 8 times, and I just kind of, you know.
Okay, see, I wasn't sure if that was you guys making the sounds yourself.
No, that was Manny. Okay. Manny is a huge, I guess, a bloodhound. What is? I'm probably saying that wrong. Sorry, Mark. Manny is a very large dog, probably bigger than Mark for the most part.
Oh wow!
Yeah, like, but yeah. So we got Manny barking a lot, and then I just kind of looped them over each other. But yeah, I mean, the Bumpus sounds, that's a pretty iconic scene. You know, stealing the turkey. Also, that was really cool because I believe that there was a line, you know, so, you know, I can take credit for writing most of the lyrics, but really Gene Shepherd wrote most of the lyrics, right?
Well,
it was my job to take his important lines and find ways to rhyme them, you know, so, I mean, I'd add things here and there, but that rhyme was built in when he goes, did he say 785 of the smelliest dogs alive? Yeah. Maybe I added the alive, but the 785 of the smelliest dogs was him. And maybe I added the alive, but I mean, that one kind of wrote itself, you know. So, that's very specific. I mean, Gene Shepherd is amazing. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's classic. It's so much so that, like you said, they show it every Christmas Eve for like all day.
and so I guess, you know, we can say right here. So we've got a lot of friends from Europe and everything, and we've met a lot of bloggers and podcasters and things just from Vista Blue. And so when we started sending this out, it was getting good reviews, or people that haven't posted reviews yet have been messaging us and like it. And we've been talking to people, but we slowly also discovered they have no idea what we're singing about. And they just like the music. And so most of my friends in Europe, they don't know the movie. And so I'm having these hilarious conversations where they're like, well, is it like a black and white classic? And I'm like, no, it's just this movie from the 80s. And you know, they're like 24 hours. You know, it's on, and I'm like, it's just, it comes on, and people will leave it on and quote the whole thing, and families will watch it. And, but we're also learning about their customs too. And like in Sweden, apparently at 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve, they watch the set of Donald Duck cartoons, and that's what they do. Yeah. And they're not Christmas related for the most part. I believe maybe one or two are, you know, I was talking to some friends about it, and then I brought it up on Snow in Southtown, and Rusty had heard of it. And, yeah, and so we're finding about the odd things that people do, and you just attach nostalgia to some weird things, and this weird movie is one of the things that it's attached to. I don't know.
You know what, though? The movie it's just really Americana. I mean, it really is. It's like, it just captures that feel. So, I mean, I get why another country really wouldn't be, like, super into it.
Well, and not only that, just don't know it, right? And so, I mean, I think I have some friends that are going to check it out this year, and we'll see if they get it. They might. I mean, I don't know. I probably won't get it. I don't know. Because it's, like, it's from the 80s, but it's not. It's set in 1940 or whatever.
Yeah, it's not about the 80s at all,
Right, yeah. So, I don't know.
So much so that when we covered it, my guest actually thought, like he grew up thinking the whole thing was set during the 80s. He didn't realize it.
Wow.
Until he was older, and then he, you know.
Okay, yeah. Wait, I guess, a minute. As a kid, yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. But tell me about the Higbee's promo.
Oh, so my friend Reese, who is the drummer for Vista Blue, when we play live shows and when we record drums, we don't always record drums. I do a lot of them in GarageBand because, again, free. But but we're lucky enough, I will say, we're lucky enough that we have a good friend who is Reese's brother-in-law, actually, Matt Drastic. Matt Drastic was in the Matt Yonker. He was in the Teen Idols way back in the day, and then toured with the Queers for a while. And then he became, at the end of the 90s, the drum tech and everything for Less Than Jake. And so he now is Less Than Jake's drummer. And but so for years, he's just spent months of the year on the road. And he has a home studio. And actually, I met Matt before I met Reese. I met Matt because my band The Loblaws recorded at his studio when I first moved to Nashville. And then when I met Reese, it was just this huge coincidence that his brother-in-law was Matt. And so anyway, so Matt has this studio that he books a lot, you know, but he's also on the road a lot. And so we do get to rehearse there. It's where Vista Blue rehearses, is at this great studio. But also we can use it for drums when we feel like we really need to bug Matt for a favor, you know.
So, right.
We did some drums this summer there. Or not me. I mean, obviously we were distant, so recently some drums for some other Vista Blue projects. But but Reese is very involved in the whole creative process, even when he's not drumming. And we did an EP based on urban legends a couple years ago. I love urban legends. And one of my favorite stories is the story of the Hook Killer, right? Ever since I was like a kid reading the Alvin Schwartz book, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, mm-hmm. I love this idea that you're out on Lover's Lane and you turn on the radio and you hear about the Hook Killer, right?
Yeah.
And so I had Reese.
Classic.
I had Reese do this voiceover. And he's so creative. He's so awesome. And he does Christmas songs with us every year. And so he did this great like news broadcast voice. And I layered, like, they were flipping through the radio and I layered in some Hook songs. So you had like Blues Traveler. You had, you know, Baby, I'm Hooked on You, who I think is Bread, maybe. You know, it's like three Hook songs. And then you have Reese come in. And it's like really cool. It's like something that we can't put on Spotify because it has these songs in it. So,
right.
Few people have ever really heard it. It's only on the Bandcamp version of the EP. But so anyway, so Reese was like, hey, we should do like another like promo, like a radio thing. And so I dug through, and the radio station in Cleveland at the time would have been this WTAM, which I think is still around. So we figured it'd be cool to do like a Higbee's promo because we do sing about Higbee's. We have a whole song about Higbee's, and then we mention it mm-hmm. at least another time. And it's such a big part of the movie. There's like glued to the glass looking in at Higbee's, mm-hmm. and that's where they go see Santa. So we pulled up the YouTube old as we could get, like old TV commercials, probably from the early 70s maybe, and we just kind of used what they had and kind of rewrote the script based on that. So it's like pretty much ripping off things that they said in these old TV commercials. And then my wife, who like he was a band director, she and I sat down in GarageBand and put together the background music with like an oboe and a flute and stuff like that. And my wife kind of, you know, did some of that with me, and sent it over to Reese, and we came up with a script and he recorded the thing. And you know, it's really cool. Like I said, like pretty much everything that's in that script, we got from old commercials, you know, from Higbee's. So, we just kind of ripped it all off and put it together. But it was something fun I could do with Reese and my wife at the same time. You know?
So, well, it's a great segue because it goes right into that next one. I want to go to Higbee's tonight.
I want to go to Higbee's. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is another great tune. I keep saying it, but that's because they're all really good. It's hard to find anything at all that you know you don't like about it. They're all catchy, they're up tempo numbers, they're just, I love them. And they're great stuff.
Thank
you. Man,
thank you so much.
So I Want to Go to Higbee's is all about, of course, you know, checking it out and seeing Santa and all that,
seeing all the toys and seeing Santa,
all the toys. Yeah, exactly.
That was one where, you know, it was summer, it was like spring and summer when I was doing it, and that was when I had to go pull up some video just to remember, kind of because I didn't have enough lyrics. I was like, well, what the heck do they see besides Santa and the Red Ryder BB gun?
That's really all that I remember.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and of course, Wizard of Oz. And so, yeah. So I had to actually pull up some video on YouTube just to kind of remember what they saw.
Double check. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I came up with that break that I love the break where it's like 2-9-9-9. You know, it's like, I like to have harmonies. I don't like to force the harmonies. And so this is one that didn't have a lot of space for harmonies. But in that break, I could. And that's also why I threw like the synthesizer on there to kind of give it a different feel.
Yeah. See, and I love harmonies.
Me too, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have some really good ones on a lot of them. You know, so like when you get into the, you know, I Don't Want Your Tinker Toys and, you know, all those. I mean, there's some really great, you know, toys, but then you have toys, you know, and stuff like that. Don't need your Tinker Toys. I mean, this is good stuff. And then you have like little, I don't want to say counter melodies because they're not really counter melodies, but they're not harmonies per se. So it's just like backing vocal.
We'll bring in like a different melody. Like,
yeah. I'm not sure.
And we do it a lot at the end of our songs. Just like just to give it sort of this, you know, round, like a merry-go-round kind of feel with like, it could literally be 8 to 12 people doing different stuff, you know? So mm-hmm. I try not to do it too often or too much, but it is.
Right. But it's definitely effective when you use it. Yeah. It's definitely effective.
I do it a lot.
And then, of course we talked about Hey Scott, but after that you get to the, I'm going to get an A+ on my theme.
Yeah. So, right. So, and that one, it's so funny because Scott, when I finally said, I'm going to do the Scott song, and I just kind of came up with it. I was like, oh, this is easy. This kind of wrote itself. Right.
Right.
I was like, okay, that's probably, I hadn't done Tinker Toys yet. I was like, that's probably like the most punk song that's going to be on the CD. I was like, I should follow it with something really poppy. It should be poppy, like a poppiest song, you know? And so I was like, and seriously, I just heard the tap, tap on the snare drum and then just come in. We had just done a song at Christmas called Secret Santa. And Secret Santa by Vista Blue is basically almost the same kind of thing. But, you know, the melody is a little bit different. But when I listen to the two songs, I realize that they're kind of the same. But, you know, well, whatever. I do that
does
a lot.
Happen to a songwriter sometimes.
Anyway, hey, it's two different bands. You know, who knows? This is Ralphie. This is not me. But yeah, but so A plus on my theme, that I just like wrote the song, everything but that middle eight. A perfect theme will make them see that I wrote that later. But I mean, yeah, I was like, oh, this is easy. Like, it's, none of these songs are really complex, you know, let's face it. But it was just like, yeah, like I just heard that tap, tap, go right into the, you know, the easy chords right there. Super poppy. Basically the only one without distortion. It was like, I had it just like scut and then this like back to back.
Nice.
Yeah. They kind of both, I mean, it was really like in 20 minutes, I probably wrote both of those songs.
Wow. That's pretty cool. It's much faster than I think the fastest I've ever written a song is like 2 hours. So 20 minutes is,
I do it sometimes. It happens. It doesn't always work that way, but I've been known to just like throw
crank them out.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah.
Again, they're not complex. You know, we're not talking about,
They're good. It doesn't matter if they're complex as long as they're good. You know,
if it gets stuck in my head, that's my first thing. You know, it's like, if I do it and then I leave it and if I can come back that night and remember it or the next day and remember it, I was like, oh, that's probably a decent song. You know, if I can remember it 24 hours later, it's probably pretty good. So then I decide what do I want to do with it from there? You know, how do I want to build it? Yeah.
Cool. Right on, man. So then of course we got into the, they traded Bullfrog. You kind of talked about that one already.
Yeah. That one, we already had used that one. Right.
Mm-hmm. So. And then, let's see, after that is I Got a Zeppelin.
That was, you know, that's one that I have always, I love that scene. I think Randy going, whoopee, I got a Zeppelin. Like, not so many people have found it to be as iconic as me, I guess, but that's fine. I mean, we can have little references too.
Yeah.
But I thought in my head that that was a bigger reference, but I guess not so many people know that one.
No, I think it's more of a deep cut. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, that's fine. That's good.
But it's cool.
And I don't know how Randy keeps weaseling his storyline into these songs. Because he's not even in the band, technically.
But, he's like, did you ever see Scott Pilgrim?
Oh, man. It's been a long time.
Okay. Well, he's like that other guy that young Neil. He's like young Neil who just kind of hangs out with the band.
Yeah. And so we put him as a guest in the liner notes. We said he's a guest. You know, he's the annoying bro. He does walk to school with him and stuff. And so,
he does. Yeah.
So he's around. They let him. I don't remember in the sequel how much. I don't know. I don't remember if he annoys them in the sequel or not.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'm kind of really wanting to check it out.
You got to see it. You got to watch it once.
I know. And I keep saying I'm going to watch that and like Christmas Vacation 2.
Oh, yeah, that's bad too. Now, I'll tell you the one I couldn't get through was the, I guess you know this, the Christmas Story. There's a sequel that they actually made like a few years later, My Summer Story. Do you know that
one? I had heard that one. I never seen it though, but yeah.
I tried. It's on YouTube.
That bad, huh?
I think like it was the first scene, maybe it was like something to do with the Bumpuses and like they were actually like involved somehow. It's like, I don't want like the Bumpuses should be a distant, unseen thing, right?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be actually like involved. Like just the dogs coming over is enough. But it was like, it was like they were like more involved. It was in the backyard. I don't remember the whole thing. I shut it off and never went back.
Yeah, I get to.
You know, one day we're on like our fifth album. I'll probably have to go watch it to get some references.
If you start,
what, y'all don't know this one?
You know, you're running out of material.
What? This is from the sequel.
Come on, guys. So it is something then that you're planning on doing, like at least for the foreseeable future.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see how it goes. We're already talking about other song ideas that we left off. Like I said, I probably had four or five songs I didn't use.
Right,
that I could have finished up. And then I was, you know, and then we were going to do one for like a comp. I mean, look, this summer was supposed to be more of a buildup. We were going to be at a couple conventions even that we were talking to about doing Ralphie's Red Riders and possibly some Snow and Southtown stuff. And so when everything got shut down, it was just like, it ended up just being like, hey, we released this baseball song. We're making this album. on Black Friday, you can hear it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we realized through the Christmas podcast, and then when the Dolly Parton record came out, some people were like ready for Christmas music.
Yeah.
There's still some people who are like Grinches who are like, no, you can't do Christmas yet. So that's why we did the CD on November 1st. Mm-hmm. We'll wait till after Halloween. CD release November 1st. We'll send you a download code when you buy the CD. And then Black Friday is still the like wide release on Spotify and everything. So.
Nice.
So that's how we got to that.
Right on. And yeah, so then we did I Don't Want Your Tinker Toys. I Won't Shoot My Eye Out. I like that one. You know.
Oh, wait, I do want to go back to Tinker Toys.
So okay, go for it.
So the harmonies on that one, mm-hmm. Also on Scut and the background gang vocals on Scut, Farkas, mm-hmm. And then Tinker Toys. So that's my cousin, Christopher, who is an amazing musician. He's probably 10 or 12 years younger than me, first of all. So he's just a super talented kid. And he has worked with me in various bands, just like doing stuff. I mean, I remember like when I was playing before I moved from New Orleans and I would play like coffee shops and he would come play. He was still in high school, you know? So, mm-hmm. So he helped produce like an EP for one of my bands. He's just really reliable. My music is not like his number one music.
Right.
More like heavier stuff and hardcore stuff. But you know, hey, he grew up around me. So he got into like Oasis and Weezer and stuff like that nice. For me. And so he does have those influences too. But so, he's on the Christmas comp with us every year. We've done like some awesome like rap songs together. So we've collaborated a lot. He's really talented. So Tinker Toys, yeah, sent to him. But those parts that you're talking about, that mm-hmm. gang harmony that you're hearing,
right.
mm-hmm. that's Christopher. So yeah, that's him. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Good job,
he did a great job. Okay. So I wanted to thank him.
Yeah. I love harmony, but especially in the songs like this, you know, yeah, you don't want to go with like the 3-4 part harmonies or anything like that.
That's the thing. That's a harmony that I didn't hear. That's I'm really lucky to have all these friends, like, you know, mm-hmm. everybody from Christopher or Mark or Reese or my wife or, you know, Mark's wife who pitched in here. That like, I don't always hear everything. You know, like I'm listening to like Brian Wilson and Paul McCartney most of my life. And so like, you know, I hear these things and it's right. like, I don't listen to that music that Christopher listens to a lot, or I don't listen to a lot of like songs that have these kind of like gang vocals in them. You know, it's like, I knew this was mm-hmm. the style I wanted to do, but that wasn't my instinct to hit that harmony. And yeah, I think you're right. Like Mark's on there with me and Mark and I are doing like some gang vocals, but when Christopher added that harmony that I would have never thought of on my own, but once I heard it, I was like, yeah, that's what it needed. You know, so.
Which actually reminds me of something. When you sing your lead, do you double your lead vocals?
Oh yeah.
It sounded yeah.
That's a Brian Wilson. Yeah. That's double everything.
It sounded very doubled. I always double whenever I'm doing harmony. I always double myself, for the harmonies, of course. And then even for the lead, but for some reason, when it's just my voice, I don't like my voice doubled.
Oh really?
I don't know what it is. And I think it's because I don't think I'm that talented of a singer. And so I have a hard time getting it, you know, singing it the same way twice.
Right.
And
so first of all, I'm definitely not a talented singer. but what it is that my melodies are so I couldn't do like a Broadway musical and double it.
Right. Right.
I'm just not good enough. You know, my cousin Terrell, who is in the Robinsons with me, my old band, he got a college scholarship for vocals, and he was one of our backup singers. And sometimes we'd have songs that like I just felt like I wasn't going to do justice, and I give it to him because he was just this amazing vocalist. In our band, he was just like a keyboard player and a backup vocalist, but he could double anything. Where like my melodies just kind of have to be succinct and tight mm-hmm. And sort of short phrases and short syllables. But yeah, like when it gets long, it's harder. And I do have to kind of retrack and retrack, and I hate retracking.
I do too.
Like I said, I like my stuff to be snapshots. Right. So I was saying, so, you know, the stories that I always read are like Ryan Wilson or Joey Ramone, or like these, they can just nail these double track vocals, and they were just pros at it. You know, yeah, it's hard. It's very hard to do. It's something I've learned to do with myself. And again, I've had great help from friends, and like my friend mm-hmm. Wyatt Funderburk is one of the best producers I know. And he has helped me a lot with recording vocals and things, even though I'm not nearly as good as he is. He's taught me a lot of tricks along the way. And just, like mm-hmm. I said, just studying Brian Wilson and Lennon and McCartney and Joey Ramone and people like that.
Yeah. I think it's because I use too many grace notes. Like I scoop sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I can't do it. I can't. I'll sort of like, I'll have a melody when I'm doing a demo. And mm-hmm. then when I go to record, I'll kind of change it sometimes just because, yeah, that's not going to work doubled. You know, I won't.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotcha.
It happens.
Well, it sounds great.
Well, thank you.
So I won't shoot my eye out. I love this one too.
So I wrote that one as the closer, right? I was like, we got to build up to this. I won't shoot my eye out. You know, it's really easy. Everything in threes, right? And so he gets shot down three times. So it's perfect. It's really not much of like a chorus. So it's not a big sing-song chorus. It's actually a song that I probably wouldn't use in most cases. But in this case, I felt like it was the perfect way to kind of wrap everything up.
Right.
Get the three storylines in there. We had been building up to the BB gun with little sidetracks because that's what the movie does.
It's very vignette-y. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but there were little BB gun references along the way. And then Now here it is. This is what I did. You know, this is what I was trying to do this whole thing. So, you know, I had the whole thing in my mind at the end that it was going to be that whole ending. Like I said, just the merry-go-round at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be the closer. And then, of course, Mark and Beth, our bass player and his wife, Beth, first of all, Mark's wife, Beth, they moved to Nashville because she is just this excellent songwriter, singer-songwriter. And she has this whole world going on YouTube and social media. Look up Beth Crowley. Speaking of theme writing, she just has been writing songs based on books. And so it'd be like these young adult books. And she will write these killer songs based on these books. And so her songs are really good. But then the authors of the book love her songs and they'll tweet it out. And she's just like got this whole world going. So it's funny that we sort of found each other, Mark and Beth, and then me, because like we both are sort of content with just like doing our thing on the internet and just like being online, you know, like neither one of us play a ton of live shows. But she does really well. And so it's really funny because, you know, we did this, this is a long story, but I'll try and make it short. We did a 7-inch. It started as a joke in an interview where someone was asking us about baseball songs and if we do other sports. And I said, I'd love to do curling. I was just joking. And I've got one of the inspirations for Vista Blue doing baseball songs was this band I love called the Zambonis. And they do all hockey songs. They have done all hockey songs for 25 years. They've been on EA Sports hockey games. They have played at NHL All-Star games. I used them for music on my sports podcast 10 years ago, you know, and I've always been a fan of the Zambonis. And so when the Olympics were coming around after that interview, our friend, this other guy, Mark, who did the interview, was like, hey, you guys doing that curling record for the Olympics? And I said, yeah, I'll do it if I can get the Zambonis to do it with me. And I tagged the guy from the Zambonis. We were just Facebook friends.
Yeah.
Didn't really know each other. And he replied, he's like, let's do it. They have never recorded another song that wasn't about hockey. And so we ended up doing this 7-inch of curling songs where we were on the B side, the Zambonis were on the A side. It was kind of rushed because you got to put a vinyl into production quickly.
Right.
And we had this deadline of the Olympics. So we couldn't really shop it around. So we did a Kickstarter and put it out ourselves. I got to put out a record by one of my favorite bands, the Zambonis, with my band on the B side. Right.
That's awesome.
And so suddenly we had to write these curling songs in like a month. And so I had like five ideas and Mark was like, well, Beth and I are going to try one. I was like, okay. And Beth and Mark come up with this great song, you know, Girl Who Can Curl. And so we ended up using one of those. So the fact that I've got all of these friends willing to pitch in, including, you know, Mark's wife, Beth, who is a great songwriter, you know, this is the kind of stuff that happens. And so they were just like, hey, we were driving to Georgia for Christmas and we were talking about doing this band. We wrote this song. It's kind of like a doo-wop song. And it's called Electric Sex, and it's about the leg lamp. And I was like, cool, yeah, it sounds fun. And so I kind of listened to their demo once and put it on the side with all of my ideas. And when I went back to it in the spring, it just blew me away. And once again, what it is like this fact that I have these friends who not only participate in stupid ideas with me, right? But then we'll try to write songs that sound like something that fits in with my goofy songs and end up writing amazing songs in the process. And so I'm really fortunate. They gave me the song, and the more I got into it, I was like, this could go like right in the middle as like the centerpiece of the album. I was like, really, you know, with the different style and what we're going to do with it, it really just needs to be the new closer. And so it's like, I won't shoot my eye out. I won't shoot my eye out. And then finally kind of building up to this, I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful song. I feel lucky to have it. It was, like I said, it's like a doo-wop demo that they did.
It is, yeah.
And I made it like a Weezer kind of, you know, song. I added the synth and then I added that whole end with in my window. But they had all the lyrics and all the stuff was them. The keyboard melody was them. this demo was pretty much done. I think I changed two lines to make it sort of fit what I wanted to do. But I think I have their demo, and I think we're going to put it out on our Christmas thing that we do. Or maybe I can send it to you one day. But I mean, yeah, they just kind of wrote the song in the car going to their parents' house for Christmas. So.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
It's amazing. It's the only one, again, that I didn't write, but it's my favorite one. You know, I mean, I'm not going to sit around and love my songs, but, you know, when my friends contribute, like, yeah, I just
think it's awesome.
So, again, really lucky to have it. And I love that it's part of the record. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely, like, when I first heard the song, I mean, I knew it was different. It stood out in a good way. It was good. I like it. It's not my favorite, though. I still like I don't want your Tinker Toys and Hey Scott, you suck better.
Yeah, I'll say so.
If I'm just angry or what.
I'll say for mine, yeah, like outside of their song that they wrote, the two that kind of stick with me is like, hey, that's really cool, would be Tinker Toys and A Plus on My Theme.
Yeah.
Have been the two that I've really liked, you know, that kind of surprised me that like, they were kind of throwaways when I wrote them, but now they really stick with me. So.
Yeah. Well, it's a good pairing there, you know, the Hey Scott, you suck. And then that one.
Yeah.
Like it's a nice sag, something different, but,
right.
But it does make me wonder, you know, what would you say is like your happiest memory recording this, or like what's your favorite moment of this
whole process? So like I said, the whole process was a blast. You know, this was not an easy summer, of course, for anyone. And honestly, we like I said, the plan was to slow down for 2020 with Vista Blue. Mm-hmm. Then we got hit with this quarantine where we didn't have anything else to do. And so in March, I think we did 3 EPs. We just started cranking them out. And then, because we didn't have anything else to do, and we were kind of thinking, we're thinking, hey, this is going to be over by the summer. Then we'll get back to like Ralphie's Red Riders and do some Christmas convention stuff. And so, but then, you know, April 1st, Adam Schlesinger of Fountains of Wayne died. And it just shook me. I was like, suddenly I just like stopped doing music. I just kind of focused on like work and just kind of horror movies again, just kind of escaped from it, put everything off. Finally, my brother and some friends got together with me, and we did a Fountains of Wayne tribute that we put out. And so that kind of, you know, helped me because just, again, my friends just did these amazing renditions of Fountains of Wayne songs. And so by the end of like May, I was kind of back into doing music again. So, I mean, when I sat down to really put this together in May and record it in June, it was just really cool again that like, not only was I doing it, but so many friends were just so supportive and pitching in and either just kind of listening to mixes that I'd send them or actually participating in gang vocals or whatever, or Mark doing all the bass. And so, I mean, I don't know if I can like, just pick one moment. It was just the idea that like it was June of like the craziest summer of my life, other than 2005, the year of like Hurricane Katrina and stuff, you know? But like, but here I was with like leg lamp set up around my studio, and you know, I had my leg lamp mug and drinking coffee out of it, and like just kind of, you know, and gearing up to all the Christmas podcasts, doing like Leon Day stuff and Christmas in July stuff, you know, it's like this whole Christmas community that Rusty and I had kind of fallen into. And so it was just kind of a really cool time to just escape from it and kind of think about Christmas for a little bit and look forward to like, hey, let's get this record out and Christmas time and have a lot of fun, you know, doing a podcast and sharing this music with people, you know. So nice. It wasn't just this, we were doing Vista Blue Christmas stuff too. We got a lot of music coming out. We're on that vinyl comp that Vista Blue did, and so I mean, yeah, it was like just a whole summer of like, we did 2 or 3 summer songs, and then we did like a ton of Christmas music that we'll be releasing now. So I don't know if there's, again, I don't know if there's one part, but it was like, you know, every day it was like, hey, here's Christopher's vocals, here's Manny howling that I'm going to mix in. It's like, it's really kind of fun, you know, a few weeks of recording this stuff. So, yeah.
Cool. I think for me, the part that made me smile the most, was the, it's funny because it's not my favorite song, but I think it really did make me smile the most was the closer there, the Electric Sax.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not classic. Something you'd expect. Yeah, at that point, you know, kind of touched on stuff. We got to the BB gun. It's like, what's left? You know, it's like, it's sort of, to me, it's like he's gotten through the Christmas season, And now he's like, he's got his BB gun. He's like, man, but that leg lamp. That was cool, man.
That was something else. Was, yeah.
Right? Because, like, you're so, when you're a kid, like, you're just so blinded, like, it's Christmas, 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 you know? And now, like, you get to, like, that week after Christmas, and you kind of play with your toys, and you kind of hang out with your friends, and you're like, you finally can, like, think about other things again, you know?
It's
like, man, that leg lamp, man, that was cool for a little while. So my mom, like, broke it or whatever.
You did it on purpose.
Yep.
But now we come to one of my favorite parts of the show, which is a little segment I like to call To the Max. So this is where we talk about our favorite or do our best impression of our favorite part. You don't have to do an impression because it's actually you. But but where we talk about our favorite part of the in this case, the album. So we won't be – there are no votes, just because, you know, and sure. I'll just let you go first. You just kind of like maybe give me your favorite lyric out of the whole thing. And if you can, because I know that's hard. That's like,
yeah, it's hard. Like I said, because
which
I can't
kid
really,
is your favorite, you know?
Yeah, I can't like take credit either because like this is not like I just dreamed this all up from scratch. So it's a little different this time. I'm very proud of some of my stuff, like on other projects. This one is like I was basically putting a puzzle together, you know? That's kind of how I look at it. I do like some of the stuff I came up with. I think in Bullfrog, that was a tougher one because there was nothing there, right? And so, and I don't want to like stray from the movie. I don't want to invent things that aren't there, you know? So it's like, I want to take what the movie gives me. And I want, if you're a fan of the movie, I want you to feel like you know everything that's there. So other than the mythology that we created about them writing songs, I wanted to be true to the movie. So, so this one was tough, but so, you know, he says utility infielder, that's like his gripe is like, we got a whole team of utility infielders, you know? And so, and so I came up with the bat wielder. They dealt our best bat wielder for utility infielder. So I thought that I like that one. The one that gets me for some reason is it's really nothing special, but at the end of A plus, again, I really like that one for some reason, but at the end of A plus, I bring in the third harmony on If Only in My Dreams, because it's like, that's what he's doing. Like the whole time he thinks that Miss Shields is the ticket to getting this BB gun, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so he's going to, but then you realize like, no way, kid, like you're dreaming, right? Like we know, like we can see it coming. And so, and so like that line, that third harmony comes in and it's like, if only in my dreams, I'm going to get an A plus on it. So like, not even going to get the A plus. So, So, I mean, I like that part, but I, again, like I have to give credit to Mark and Beth. And so when they say, I remember when we all heard the crash, the new light of my life had been smashed.
I did like that one,
That one. And then also, we talked about it, but Tinker Toys. What if Black Bart comes from my family? I'm all grown up now. I don't need your Tinker Toys. I triple dog dare you to give me some. I'm not a little kid. I want a BB gun.
That's actually my favorite. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So those are the ones that I thought of when you asked me the question. Yeah.
that's exactly what I was going to do. Because you have, I mean, it's a cool little thing. It's like, what if Black Bart comes for my family? I'm all grown up now. You know,
and that's it. No, you nailed it.
Tinker Toys or something like that. But
That's it.
I like that, man. That was my favorite one. Like,
thank you. That's funny. It's definitely like it's fast, man. I don't usually write songs like that, you know. I mean, I listen to songs that are like that sometimes, but that's not in my writing like wheelhouse. So
I know what you mean. Yeah. A lot of the ones that I do, because like for the last I don't know how many years I've played in various cover bands and just whatever, you know, and we do a lot of like Crosby, Stills, and Nash and you know, Fleetwood Mac kind of stuff. So a lot of what I write is kind of like in that style.
Gotcha.
So whenever I hear something like this, it's like, I know I can, but I never do. I never write it like this. It's like, I want to write it like this, but for some reason I always go back to the old faithful, you know?
Oh yeah. I'm definitely always on the 1-4-5. And so, I have to I have to almost get in character to get out of that, you know?
Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. But, you know, G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think is the other half?
So, you know, you can go a number of ways here. So the first way you can go is the other half is getting that BB gun, right?
Yes.
But on our record, I don't think it's clear that he got it on the record. And so, you know, that's something that we will have to revisit later. So honestly, what I have to go with, the other half is having friends like Schwartz and Flick, who will help you do cool stuff, which in my case, you know, it's all these other people. It's not Schwartz and Flick, but right. You know, I mean, the mythology here is like Ralphie's making this record with Schwartz and Flick, and they're singing these songs and they're writing these songs. And so,
yeah.
You know, and again, I couldn't have done this by myself. I got Mark and then you know, Reese and Christopher and Donna and Beth and Manny and whoever else, you know, were involved in helping out. So, yeah.
Well, it's a great concept album, man. I like it.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks. Yeah.
So for me, if knowing is half the battle, the other half is that Scut sucks. I went simple.
and we tell him he sucks.
Too. Exactly. Yeah.
We tell him.
If he doesn't know it, he will after this.
Yeah. Poor Scut.
I know.
He really just wants some friends. Yeah, he just wants some friends.
He just doesn't know how to. Yeah. Anyway. Okay, it's been a lot of fun talking about this album, learning about your process and everything. Where can they find you? I mean, you know, tell me about it.
So, all right. So first of all, our main project, which I should pitch, is Vista Blue. So it's We Are Vista Blue at bandcamp.com. And you'll find, like I said, like over 30 releases. We're also on Spotify and everywhere where you can find music. And so that's our main thing that we do right now. And so this concept was Ralphie's Red Riders. And so that will be Ralphie's Red Riders. bandcamp.com. We're on Facebook. Both Vista Blue and Ralphie's Red Riders are on Facebook, and then streaming everywhere, Spotify, Apple Music, and all that stuff. And of course, I should say, since this is a Christmas show, if you haven't heard Snow in South Town, my friend Rusty and I do Snow in South Town. And again, we're both really like musicians and English teachers and all this other stuff. And Snow in South Town is just something we do for fun. It's not the best podcast or whatever. It's just really fun just hanging out with Rusty and talking about Christmas. You know, in April and July and October or whenever we're doing it. And so it's a lot of fun. And so, yeah, I think as a fan of this show, maybe you should check out Snow and South Town too. So.
Definitely should. Yeah. I love the bit that you guys talk about where, you know, it's like a top 10. You did the top 10 movies, top 10 music, and you're like,
yeah.
You know, if you don't like it, blame our friends. It's a terrible taste.
We did. It's fun. I have to give my friends credit because I could just be like someone who doesn't have friends. And I'm really like, I'm not a social person. Like, it's weird because like I play shows and like for 20 years, I've gone and played music all around and stuff. And I love it. And I have fun. But outside of like that environment, I'm kind of awkward. So we're not like in my living room watching horror movies or whatever. Like, so the fact that I do have friends that do stuff, I'm very thankful. And so we sent out a survey over the summer and we said, hey, if you had to pick your top 10 Christmas songs and movies, what would it be? And it's the summertime. Like, who's thinking about Christmas? And we got probably like 30, 40 responses. And so put together a top 10, which were mostly things that we wouldn't have picked. And so we had to talk about it. So then we just made fun of our friends the whole time. So this year what happened is now we're picking our own stuff, but it's like stuff that like Christmas with the Cranks that I know Rusty is going to hate, but I love it. And so I just want to hear him like whine about it the whole time.
That's going
to
be
and
awesome.
He's picking like weird Christmas albums that I have to listen to. And so it's fun. Like I love Rusty and I love Christmas. So you know, there you go.
Right on. And there you go. Ralphie's Red Riders.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming on. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me and taking the time out of your life and your show, you know, subjecting your listeners to a band that writes 2-minute pop punk songs about a movie.
I don't know, you know? I'm sure if my listeners are, you know, they're kind of nostalgic for the 80s. So I'm
awesome.
It's like right up their alley.
Yeah. Again, you know, and I guess I should mention it is on CD if you're into like physical products, but it's also come Black Friday. We'll be streaming everywhere, Spotify, Apple Music, or whatever. And of course, on Bandcamp, you can buy it digitally. So the CD is up at I should mention the Store Envy. So it's Radiant Radish is like our label. So radiantradish.storeenvy.com. And that's where you can buy the CD. And that's out right now, like I said. Then you can buy the digital version on Black Friday.
So. Right. Very cool.
Yeah. Thanks to you and to everyone for listening. I'm really appreciative. Thank you.
Yeah. Anytime, man. So I'm going to end it by saying I'm going to get an A+ on my theme. So check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like Ralphie looking at his old man's major award, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes. You suck.
think I'm gonna beat you up. I really wanna.